I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. Mama tried, mama tried.
Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tymie Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, probation and parole. Hello and thanks for joining us. Hello, Ben.
Hi, Tymie. Hi, everybody. So good to have you with us. Today, we're going to talk about community corrections, yes. Probation and parole. And this was a listener request from another former student, Isabel Foley. Do you remember Isabel?
You're going to have to stop asking mm-hmm. me this because I've probably had every student you're mm-hmm. going to name and then I don't remember them I'm getting old. So please don't do this to me anymore.
Okay, sorry.
If I had you.
Isabel, Tymie definitely remembers you. But she comes back frequently for Alumni Day, and she's a probation officer in Charlottesville.
Okay, I think mm-hmm. I know who she is.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So we're proud of her. We love her. We miss her. Thank you for this suggestion,
Thanks for being a great
Isabel.
Student.
Mm-hmm. So, Tymie, what is the difference between probation and parole? They're similar ideas. Begin with the same letter of the alphabet.
Yeah, we can call them P and P, right?
Well, in South Carolina, the state agency was probation, parole, and pardons.
Oh,
everybody,
PPP.
Yeah, everybody called it triple P, but like I wanted to say PPP, PPP.
PPP. Yeah. Probation is a sentence mm-hmm. in and of itself. They're both community supervision.
Right.
One's a sentence, mm-hmm. one you get when you're released from prison.
Yep.
It's like early release. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so some easy ways to remember the difference between probation and parole. You gave us two of those. Good job. Probation is a sentence, isn't in and of itself, so a judge. Judge will sentence you, say, I sentence you to probation.
Yes.
But parole is just early release from prison. So you would yes. not get sentenced to parole. A judge would not say, I sentence you to parole.
Correct.
You just get released from prison.
Right.
And on that note, probation comes before prison.
Yeah.
Although technically they're, you know, like, but anyway, probation is like before prison. You think
yes.
of it either temporarily or, you know, as a sentence before, and parole comes after prison.
Yes.
Another way to remember that is typically probationers are less serious, lower risk groups because
yes.
obviously typically they commit less serious offenses than parolees because parole you have to go to prison first.
Yes.
And also we can recognize the ways that incarceration can increase offending risk. So
right.
probationers are usually less serious offenders, lower risk, parolees. Higher risk. So when we
right.
look at like recidivism rates, about 2/3 66% of parolees are rearrested within 3 years. About half return to prison.
Yeah. Can mm-hmm. you define recidivism for any new listeners that we have that might not understand these criminological terms?
No, you must go back and listen to our previous episodes.
We do have listeners in other countries.
Yeah.
So now I'm trying to, you know, yeah.
Well, I'll be nice this time, but in the future, all terminology, you must refer to previous episodes. Yeah. But recidivism is when you commit another offense, either while you're on some form of correctional supervision, like parole
yes.
or probation, or after you've been released from prison. Recidivism is committing another crime after you've been
yes.
sentenced or found guilty of
that's,
another
that's
one.
That's for our mm-hmm. Bulgarian listener,
mm-hmm. oh,
the
nice.
One. Listener mm-hmm. that we have from Bulgaria.
Oh, thanks. Let's expand to other countries
yes.
in that area too. So tell your neighboring country friends to tune in. Two-thirds of parolees are rearrested for a new crime within
okay.
3 years and
yep.
about half go back to prison. And then when we look at probationers, about 2/3 successfully complete their probation. So almost flip there in terms of numbers.
Yeah.
But, those are the differences. Otherwise, probation and parole are very similar concepts in the terms of how they're executed
mm-hmm.
and supervised, and even in terms of historically when they emerged in what correctional scholars refer to as the reformatory era of correctional history.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about boring history
Great.
In a moment. But before we do that, let's offset that with some fun facts about probation and parole first, Tymie. So give us some fun facts about probation and parole. Pee-pee.
Okay, well, the first fun fact is not on this list.
Oh, yes. It's going to be even more fun then.
I'm just trying to, like, you mm-hmm. know, entice our listeners to keep listening.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a friend who is in a pretty, they're not famous, but they're mm-hmm. kind of like underground hip hop famous who received 25 years of probation.
Holy moly.
For stealing a microwave. That's just a fun fact.
Yeah.
I won't name him just so, you know, I can protect his privacy.
Right.
But it was a pretty severe sentence. So it caused all kinds of problems when they were trying to travel and tour outside of the country because he had to fill out all this special paperwork to go on tour. Anyway.
25 years. Well, yeah, that's, I've never heard of that before in my life. Okay.
Yeah,
fun fact number one. On to number two.
Probation is the most widely used sanction and punishment in the U.S., which I think maybe listeners would be surprised to know that. Prior to COVID, which screwed everything to pieces, about 2 to 3 times more people were on probation than in prison.
Right. So a lot of attention when we talk about American corrections goes to prison because, you know, we kind of invented the prison as crime for punishment. And, you know, just because like the idea of prison is sexy in the way that it like captures people's attention. Let's talk about prison.
Right.
But really the dominant modal experience with the correctional system is probation.
Right. About 1.5% of U.S. adults were on either probation or parole in 2021.
Yeah, so 1.5%, almost 2% of people on probation or parole, like we just talked about, you know, that's the majority experience with corrections, and that seems like a lot, but actually between 2011 and 2021, the number of people on probation decreased by 65%.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And that's not just due to COVID. Like there was a big drop in, you know, 2020, but like from 2011, every year it was like thousands of people in reductions in probation populations.
Okay.
And overall, we've seen reductions in correctional populations over the last decade and definitely in the number of people on probation.
Okay. Last fun fact.
All right. One more.
The supervision rates of black individuals declined from 2020 to 2021, while the supervision rates of white individuals increased. Interesting.
Yeah. We've talked a lot, or certainly criminologists recognize the racial disparities in the system.
Yes.
And it's something to keep a watch on for sure. And when we were in Philly recently, we saw a presentation together about reductions in racial disproportionality in the correctional system over the past decade.
Yes.
I mean, it's still way out of whack. The disparities, disproportionalities are still there, but it seems that the gap is narrowing a bit, which good correctional news. So fun facts, I guess we've put it off as long as we can.
Yeah.
So time to get in our time machine.
Yeah. Some of our listeners actually like the history part. So
all right, time machine. So we're back to the late 1800s, the reformatory era. We've talked about the penitentiary a couple of times.
Yes.
In our solitary confinement episode and other places in the penitentiary, solitary confinement, work the crime away, pray the crime away. The reformatory movement came after the penitentiary in Zebulon, Brockway. New York, Elmira Reformatory is one of the places where these reforms emerge. And the reformatory era was, instead of kind of like solitary confinement and work, it was about reform through discipline, rehabilitation programs, etc. And the primary way that this was accomplished was through the innovation that we know as indeterminate sentencing. So indeterminate sentencing was the primary feature of the reformatory movement, and parole is a defining feature of indeterminate sentencing.
Right.
So the way indeterminate sentencing works is that a judge sets your sentence in a wide range. So you get a minimum and a maximum. Let's say, you know, when you're found guilty, you're sentenced to 5 to 10 years in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you reach the minimum 5, you become eligible for parole and you go before the parole board.
Yes.
In a little etymology here, parole, the word parole comes from French, parole. And it is a word that means word or honor or pledge. So parole basically means you're being released from prison on your honor, on your pledge, on your word that you're rehabilitated. Based on that notion, indeterminate sentencing was kind of supposed to accomplish rehabilitation. So your sentence in prison is not so much based on the crime that you committed, but how soon and how ready you are to be released through rehabilitation, if you're rehabilitated. So the parole board is supposed to release you if you have been rehabilitated, not so much about the nature of the crime. And of course, in the 1970s, we had what we call the Get Tough era or the crime control era, and states moved away from this. So before that, every state in the federal government operated off indeterminate sentencing, and still about half of states have indeterminate sentencing and parole release. But one thing that I'm always careful to say when we talk about like Get Tough and determinate sentencing models, you'll hear people say like parole was abolished or the abolition of parole.
Yeah.
And I'm really careful to say that that does not mean there's no supervision after prison. So it's not like abolish parole and prisons just open their doors and say, fly free, little birds, go do your own thing. Yeah. So there's still community supervision. It's usually called something like post-release supervision or aftercare, you know. But abolition of parole really means the abolition of the parole board, parole as a release mechanism. We think of parole as supervision, but really in this sense, parole is a release mechanism, how you get out of prison by the parole board.
On to probation. Tell us about that.
Probation also emerged in the mid to late 1800s, and John Augustus, who was a humanitarian and a reformer, basically started the practice of probation as an individual himself. So he was concerned, and he would go to court, and basically he would ask the judge, like, you know, instead of sending this person to prison, let them come live with me, and I will, you know, supervise them, and I'll help them get back on their feet. And that was how the practice of probation started.
Yeah.
And probation is a Latin word, probation, that refers to an inspection, a testing, or a probing.
Yes.
So if you are abducted by aliens and getting probed, you could say that you're on probation.
Okay.
But anyway, probation was, as we intimated, originally designed more from like a social work approach, that probation officers were supposed to be like caseworkers, social workers, counselors, providing services, providing treatment.
Yes.
But probation was also affected by the Get Tough era. And now we tend to think of probation officers more like police officers, that their job is to kind of like police and punish and catch their probationers doing bad things.
Right.
And we call this like the risk management or the PM and CM approach, that it's about drug testing and control and surveillance and brokering out like services and programs to private community providers.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've talked about history, stats, fun facts, but what are probation and parole and how do they work?
Yeah, so we said that they're very similar, and definitionally both are conditional terms of community supervision. But do remember that probation is a direct sentence by the judge, parole is early release from prison, but both are conditional terms of community supervision. Right. What does that mean?
It means the supervision, getting to stay out of jail or prison, depends on you meeting certain criteria or conditions.
Right. So in Virginia, probation is a suspended jail sentence. Like your length of probation is a suspended jail sentence. And for parole, you're released early from your maximum sentence and you're on parole in the community until the end of your prison term. And if you mess up, if you don't abide by those conditions, then you're revoked and you finish out your sentence in jail or prison.
Right. So I just wanted to mention real quick for our listeners who are interested in Virginia specifically, some facts about parole in Virginia. So most types of discretionary parole were eliminated in the 1990s, except for geriatric and juvenile parole. Mm-hmm. But actually, Virginia has one of the lowest rates of parole in the country. In August of 23, these stats came out about 2022. So the governor fired the whole parole board. And then reinstated, you know, his picks. But in 2022, there were 3,320 applications for parole and only 78 were granted, which makes Virginia one of the lowest in the country.
Yeah.
And so there was a recent article in the Richmond Times about, you know, the poor state of parole and how the parole board is basically useless because they're not really approving any applications. But that's just how things sit right now in Virginia.
And even those applications would have to be like special cases, because it's not like everybody gets considered for parole. Like you have to apply because you're old or because you're sick or because you're dying.
Yeah. Or and, you were, or juvenile parole. You were convicted of a crime as a juvenile. But we have very poor rates.
Yeah, so that's probation and parole in Virginia. And as we said, they are conditional terms. So, Tommy, I do this exercise in class. How many conditions of probation or parole could you name off the top of your head?
Okay, I can only name three.
I bet you can do more than that.
Are you ready?
Yeah, go for it.
No sex, drugs, or rock and roll.
True, actually. True, probably. Maybe for the rock and roll, but I'm sure there could be some condition that would.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I sprung that one on you. Yeah.
No, but I like it. No sex, drugs, or rock and roll.
No sex, drugs, or rock and roll.
Yeah, go
Why
back
not?
To prison.
No drugs, mm-hmm. for sure, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Don't commit a crime. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no crime, no drugs.
Yeah, you can have sex, probably. Yeah, you can listen
Unless
to
you're
rock
a sex
roll.
Offender.
Right.
I'm sure that's a criteria for sex offenders. Like no sex, no porn, no internet connection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's going to be specific conditions for depending on the crime as well, mm-hmm. right? If there's the use of firearms, mm-hmm. other things.
Yeah. So like when we were talking about like no rock and roll or no sex or no pornography, yes. those might be what we yes. categorize as punitive conditions. So
right.
we can recognize three categories, standard, punitive, and treatment.
Yes.
So punitive conditions are those that are like specifically related to the crime or to the offense or either making probation supervision yeah. harder or harsher.
Right.
So things like contact restrictions, no yes. contact with the victims or categories of victims, stay away from playgrounds,
right.
stay away from other felons, residency restrictions, curfews. Those are all things
sure.
that are kind of punitive, related to the crime, yes. make probation harsher.
Yes.
Then we have the standard set of conditions, which basically everybody gets these.
Yes.
No crime, no alcohol or drugs,
yes.
mandatory drug testing, meeting
yeah.
with your probationer,
yeah.
surrendering your firearms,
yeah.
fines.
Yeah.
Community service.
Yeah.
No interstate travel, you mentioned with your...
Yeah, which tripped him up a bit on tour.
Yeah, so you can't travel, but yeah. I say, funny story here, in high school, there was this, like, big bully, like, he was a bully,
oh,
like, and
yeah.
scary, like...
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, he bucked up on my, like, seventh grade, I mean, we both have staring problems, but,
yeah.
like, he, you know, he was doing bully things out in the parking lot
yeah.
with a kid, like,
oh,
up against the car,
Pushed
and my sister was, like, you know, we were walking to the car, and she was, like, staring at him. With her mouth
oh
open. And he basically like walked over and like bucked up to this little seventh grade girl. Like,
oh my goodness.
Yeah. So that's the kind of bully yeah. that he was. But when I was in college, I was like, you know, did like my internship at the sheriff's office and
oh,
volunteered
yeah,
out
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
So one day I was like going to Kmart and I was walking in the door and he was coming out.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh. Like just got scared. And all of a sudden he was just like, hey Ben, how are you?
Oh.
Like he was so nice. He was like, it's
yeah.
so good to see you. How are you doing? And
oh.
I was like, this is definitely a trick. He's getting ready to pound
yeah.
me into the pavement.
Yeah.
But so he was nice. And then he was like, are you still out at the sheriff's department?
Oh.
And I was like, yeah. He was like, well, could you do me a favor? I'm
oh.
on probation and I really want to go, you know, like see my family in Tennessee. Can you give me permission to leave the state?
So he wanted like, something, of
yeah,
course.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, go ahead.
That's yeah. This is not where I thought the story was going. I thought mm-hmm. you were going to say something like he just, you know, became a nice person in prison or something. I don't know.
Well, who knows where he is today? Let's hope that is the case.
Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah.
standard, punitive, and then treatment conditions are about, you know, those things that would improve you, like getting an education,
right.
maintaining an education, job, anger
yeah.
management, drug treatment, education,
yes.
et cetera.
Yeah.
So those are all the conditions that can be set for your supervision. And violation of those conditions leads
right.
to revocation. Your supervision
yes.
is revoked. And it can
yeah.
be revoked for a new crime. Obviously, you commit a new crime.
Yeah.
But also it can be revoked for violating these conditions. And that's referred
yeah.
to as a technical violation.
Yes.
So it's not a crime for you and I to be out on the streets lollygagging around at 10:30 p.m.
Right.
But if you're a probationer with a curfew and you are, then that's a technical violation and you can have your
yes.
Probation revoked. And
yeah.
revocation creates big problems for the system, especially overcrowding.
Yeah.
So, and especially that's a concern for revocation for technical violations.
Right, right, right.
At one point, and this was like, you know, maybe like a decade ago, but at one point, like 2/3 of prison admissions in Texas were parole revocations.
Yeah, that's
so,
crazy numbers.
Mm-hmm, and we've talked before about jails. The big chunk of jail population is either people
yeah.
who can't afford bail or people who have had their probation revoked, probation
right.
violations.
Right, right.
So we put a lot of people on community supervision with high levels of scrutiny, security, and remember, you know, probation and parole have been affected by the Get Tough era.
Yeah.
Probation and parole officers are trying to catch them doing something bad and punishing them for that rather than helping them get their lives back together in the first place.
Well, it's not a surprise that failure and, you know, the rates, the revocation rates are so high and a problem because we're asking a lot from probation and parole officers, high stress job, high expectations, huge caseloads, right?
Yeah, for sure. You know, we talked about like public defenders and kind of like the stress on them. Caseloads for probation, parole officers are also very high. It's really difficult. Like I've never been able to find like a national average of caseload for like the that data just doesn't exist.
Right.
But the American Correctional Association recommends a caseload of like moderate to high risk probationers of being 50.
Yes.
And we know that the reality of caseloads in criminal justice is that the reality always exceeds the recommendation.
Yeah.
So although we don't have exact numbers, it's very likely that, you know, most caseloads are well in excess of 50.
Yeah.
So large caseloads, we also have very high expectations.
Yes.
So let's say you've got a probation officer with 50 clients. We expect that probation officer to keep all of her people out of trouble, keep them from committing a new crime, make them follow the rules, cure their drug addiction, get them a job, fix all of their problems that are deeply ingrained in socioeconomic inequality.
Yeah, like structural issues. Yeah. They can't solve those.
For 50 people, do that for 50 people.
Yeah.
That's expecting a lot.
Yes, definitely.
In addition to all of those expectations, probation and parole officers also have to kind of maintain a client-professional relationship. They have to do all that in the context of a professional relationship, and correctional workers in general have this expectation, like in contrast to police officers.
Right.
So police officers, they respond to a call, somebody's causing some problems, they can show up and tase them and whack them with their batons and cuff them and stuff them and throw them in the car and take them to jail and drop them off and, you know, wipe their hands and be done with it.
Yes.
Probation officers have to deal with those same problems, but also recognize that I'm going to have to deal with you tomorrow and the next day and the next day. And I can't just drop you off and somewhere and be done with it. Like, we have to maintain this relationship.
Yeah, you're really selling this job for anyone who wants to be.
High risk, high reward.
Okay.
High risk, high reward. Yeah. And then finally, role conflict is a problem. Just, you know, psychologically, we're asking probation officers to do two things that kind of conflict. You have to help people and you have to punish people. And those things just don't really go together psychologically. Yeah. I use this example when I'm teaching, like, you know, if I'm teaching this class right now, if I had to worry about if you all were going to like attack me or stab me, I wouldn't be quite so brilliant and eloquent and persuasive and effective and charismatic. And my teaching would be much less effective if I had to like manage your, a threat and punish you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So lots of tough, high-stress expectations of probation in parole work.
Okay, well, let's put a pin in that and come back to revocation rates and overcrowding. What do we know or do about that, I guess?
I mean, one of the things is to shift the mentality away from Get Tough in kind of that orientation to community service and corrections and criminal justice in general. And we've seen a bit of this over the last decade, kind of chipping away at the edges, softening, reduction in the war on drugs, some sentencing reform, reemerging interest in rehabilitation and restorative justice, all moves, baby steps in the right direction. But there's also the idea of graduated sanctions, and these are like specific policies that attempt to reduce revocation.
Yes.
And there's lots of good research evidence that these are effective. So the idea is that, you know, when someone commits a probation violation, the probation officer charges them and brings them before the judge, and then the judge makes the revocation decision. And graduated sanctions give probation officers the ability to punish their clients without going to court. So like it's graduated because it's kind of in a, like a system of severity. So it goes all the way from like verbal and written warnings to you could even like institute like weekend stays in jail. And these are based on like, you know, the severity of the revocation and the number, or the severity of the condition violation and the number of them.
Yeah.
So instead of hauling them to court and throwing them in jail, probation officers can file a written warning or can implement a curfew or can use electronic monitoring, ankle bracelet for short periods of time. And research has shown that that reduces revocation, reduces rearrest and overcrowding rates. So graduated sanctions are good, you know, evidence-based ways to reduce revocations. Although there was a pilot study actually in Rockingham County a few years ago that I read where graduated sanctions actually increased revocations.
Yeah, but I can see that happening.
Right, but
I mean, you're like expanding the power to punish.
But what was happening there is that Virginia law still required the judge to approve those graduated sanctions.
Oh, okay.
So the probation officer still had to bring them in court, and the judges instead of actually using these sanctions were just revoking and sending to jail. Anyway, so they weren't really using them.
Gotcha.
But it was that kind of net widening. You had probation officers now bringing more people into court, and the judges weren't really using the sanctions.
So increasing the power to punish, but you're also increasing the officer's discretion to treat something less seriously than the court would, because they would revoke and send them to prison otherwise.
Yeah. So it is giving probation officers a little bit more power, but we're using things like curfews instead of putting bodies in jail.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. Trade-off, I guess.
Yep. Yeah. But anyway, that's probation and parole, I suppose. You got anything else?
I do not.
All right, me neither. So we'll wrap it up there with our minute to spin it. So Tommy, in just a minute, what's your spin?
Okay, so I didn't really come up with a spin. I just wanted to use this moment to introduce the European day fine, which they use a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you kind of talked about a little about graduated sanctions, but the European day fine is very popular, and they even use it for violent offenses.
Mm-hmm.
But it's exactly that. It's just a day fine rather than incarcerating or putting anyone under additional community supervision. And it seems to work well. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's dependent upon the country, but you know, that system has been a reform opportunity to keep people out of prison. They also just don't have as many prisons as we do. So they have had to come up with alternative sanctions. And, you know, just charging people money seems to be one of those.
And one of the concerns about fines is that it may have disproportionate effect on socioeconomic.
Yes.
But day fines are actually calculated on your income.
Yes.
So the idea is that they should be distributed, equitably and hit you the same degree depending upon how much money you have or make.
Yeah, there's just an additional educational moment instead of a spin.
Yeah.
However, I'm sure you've got a great one. Ben, what's your spin?
Oh my gosh, I've been waiting so long to use this one.
Okay.
I turned 21 in prison doing life without parole. Mama tried. So, dear mama, Linda Mead's life lessons, she tried.
Yeah.
She also told me not to play with guns, but I shot a man in Reno anyway, just to watch him die. Mama tried to keep me out of prison, off probation and off parole.
Oh,
so, as we talked about with graduated sanctions, don't revoke, stay woke, tell a joke, have a smoke, drink, don't snort some coke. All right, so community corrections is a tough job, high expectations, but with things like graduated sanctions, we can empower our probation and parole officers to do their jobs, keep us safe, and help get people back on their feet and live a life free of crime.
We are a community-driven podcast sponsored by the Gandhi Center, a nonprofit which relies on support from generous donors like yourselves, of which we had one, Diane Falk. Thank you for your generous donation. If you would like to support our educational programming, click on the link in our show notes to provide a modest donation.